And it's about 12 seconds after the hour, this Tuesday, the 26th of July. I'm Ben Brown. This is a Juno Afternoon. This afternoon, we're going to be talking to Joe Wolfenstein about Porkfest. Catherine Heumann will be here with details about the ongoing plans for an arts complex here in the Willoughby Arts District. And there's going to be some information about a fly-tying class for women. In addition, of course, to Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, more, here on a Juno Afternoon. So stay tuned for all of that coming up after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Speakers called for Unity Monday during the first day of the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia as the party struggles to pull in Bernie Sanders supporters into backing Hillary Clinton for president. Some Native American delegates at the DNC are among those who are not entirely sold on that idea.
I don't know. I just can't say yes right now. I got to be honest with that.
Dustin Stumbling Bear is a Kansas delegate for Sanders. He says he still has a number of concerns with Clinton when it comes to issues including foreign policy and the environment. Stumbling Bear says a top priority for him is veterans affairs.
I don't know where I know she says she want to stand for veterans. Everyone wants to say that because it looks good. But what has she actually done to fight for us? And will she continue to fight for us? So she doesn't mind talking about going to war with these other countries and making more veterans while not expanding care doesn't really help veterans.
Stumbling Bear wants to see the next administration work on increasing veteran services. Kansas delegate Burton Warrington is also for Sanders. As a first-time delegate, he says he was involved in the Sanders campaign and is not won over either by Clinton, saying she still has work to do, which includes tribal outreach.
You know, Senator Sanders, met with over 90 tribes. Hillary's meetings have been a lot more far and few between. Maybe they haven't happened and nobody's talking about it. I don't know. But I haven't seen the engagement to the level that we did with Senator Sanders, and I think that needs to be the new standard for tribes.
Warrington says he'd like to see the next administration work on engagement with tribes. Sanders took to the podium Monday night. In his speech at the DNC, he acknowledged that he disagrees with Clinton on a number of issues, but stated that she must become the next president of the United States. A national Native American conservation group says grizzly bears should not be removed from the endangered species list. Instead, they should expand the bear's range onto tribal lands. Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards has more.
Ben Nuvamsa is a spokesman for Guardians of Our Ancestors' Legacy, or GOAL. He says the grizzly plays an intricate role in the belief systems of many tribes.
I am a member of the Bear Clan at Hopi, and it has a long and important story in our migration history. Other tribes have similar interests or beliefs in the bear.
Nuvamsa says by executive order, the federal government must consult tribes about issues like sacred species that affect them.
Bill Clinton signed an executive order for consultation with tribes. President Obama just reissued that same executive order and just reiterated the importance of consultation with tribes and their obligation to our people to make sure that we are included in whatever happens to the bear.
Recently, he met with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Director Dan Ash to express tribal frustration with the delisting plan. But he says neither the feds nor Wyoming Game and Fish have given much consideration to the group's proposal to expand the bear's range onto tribal lands when population goals in Yellowstone top out.
So I see that throughout Indian lands, you got some good property that are good habitat where the species can survive.
He says some tribes have already written letters and passed resolutions agreeing to co-manage the grizzly bear on tribal lands. Nuvamsa says such lands are ideal because they're often still in the same pristine condition they were when the grizzly roamed there. For National Native News, I'm Melody Edwards in Laramie.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Since 1970, NARF has stood firm for justice in Indian country on critical issues like treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior. Stand firm with NARF. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today is Tuesday, the 26th of July. This is a Juneau afternoon. Some information for our listeners. Tomorrow's Juneau Parks and Recreation hike will be the East Glacier Trail, and the rendezvous point will be the larger parking lot at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center, 9:30 a.m. Would-be hikers are encouraged to wear appropriate warm and or waterproof clothing, trekking poles if you like to use those, bringing water and something to eat for lunch. The idea is that lunch will be eaten at Mary Wilson's house afterwards. As always, our request is made not to bring any dogs or firearms, and carpooling is encouraged. And have a great hike on the East Glacier Trail if you are able to do that tomorrow morning. You may have heard about the First Folio, which is actually here in Juneau now. And it's at the State Library, the Father Kasheveroff Building. I'm still trying to remember how to pronounce that correctly. And the readings of all of the Bard's plays began last night, with Much Ado About Nothing being read at the Jack. And every day for the next month, 28 days, there's going to be at least one play read. It's actually one play each night at 7 p.m. at a different location, and then there's four being read each Saturday. Oh, so I lied, because it's Read Your Own Shakespeare on Sundays. You're supposed to do it on yourself on Sunday. But tonight, Love's Labor's Lost will be read at the Egan Library out at UAS. And then Wednesday night readings will be at Rockwell, Thursdays at the Valley Library, Fridays at the APK Building, and Saturdays, which is going to be, again, a four-play opportunity, will be at McPheeters Hall. And so you can go to, I believe, the Theater in the Rough website to figure out when 36 of these plays are going to be read over at six venues over 4 weeks. I'm looking forward to reading next Wednesday night Julius Caesar at Rockwell, and then also As You Like It on the 15th of August at the Jack. So that's kind of an opportunity. I think they might still need some people to read. I'm not sure. But if you're interested in Shakespeare, going and seeing the First Folio at the State Library Archive and Museum, Father Kasheveroff Building, or participating, get in touch with Theater in the Rough. This Saturday at 2 p.m., KRNN Presents will have a potpourri of live recordings by local Alaskan musicians. And this week, Saturday the 30th of July at 2 p.m., will feature a second half of a concert by Irene Muller and John Elliott. So those are some bits of information I wanted to share with you listeners. Jill Wolfenstein is going to be talking with us about Porkfest in a little while here this afternoon. But now let's listen to our friend Garrison Keillor and the Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 26th of July, 2016. It's the birthday of the writer Aldous Huxley, born Surrey, England, 1894. He was the grandson of Thomas Henry Huxley, one of the great scientists of the previous century, a man who helped popularize Darwin's theory of evolution. Aldous Huxley considered becoming a scientist too, but when he was 17, he came down with an eye disease which rendered him almost blind, and that made scientific research impossible, so he decided to be a writer. Wrote his first novel in the months after he lost his eyesight. He typed the whole thing without even being able to see what he was typing, and he never read it. His first successful novel was Point Counterpoint, about a group of artists and intellectuals who don't realize that one of the men in their company is a fascist revolutionary. After that, he thought he would write something light, something about what the future might be like, and he wrote Brave New World. came out in 1932, a book about a future in which most human beings are born in test tube factories. They're genetically engineered to belong to one of five different castes, alphas, betas, gammas, deltas, or epsilons. People keep themselves happy by taking a drug called Soma. It was one of the first novels to predict the future of genetic engineering. It's the birthday of George Bernard Shaw, born Dublin, 1856, who wrote more than 50 plays, including Man and Superman, Major Barbara, Pygmalion, and St. Joan. Died at the age of 94 after breaking his hip when he fell off a ladder from pruning one of his trees. On the night before he died, knowing he was going to die, he said to a friend, "Well, it'll be a new experience anyway." It's the birthday of Gene Shepard, the humorist, Chicago, 1921, best known for the autobiographical stories he told on the radio about a boy named Ralph Parker growing up in Homan, Indiana. One of the stories made into the movie, A Christmas Story, about Ralph wanting a BB gun for Christmas, even though every grown-up says that he'll shoot his eye out. Here's a poem by Jim Harrison entitled Bridge. Most of my life was spent building a bridge out over the sea, though the sea was too wide. I'm proud of the bridge hanging in the pure sea air. Machado came for a visit, and we sat on the end of the bridge, which was his idea. Now that I'm old, the work goes slowly, ever nearer death. I like it out here, high above the sea, bundled up for the Arctic storms of late fall, the resounding crash and moan of the sea, the 100-foot depth of the green troughs. Sometimes the sea roars and howls like the animal it is, a continent wide and alive. What beauty in this, the darkest music over which you can hear the lightest music of human behavior, the tender connection between men and galaxies. So I sit on the edge, wagging my feet above the abyss. Tonight the moon will be in my lap. This is my job, to study the universe from my bridge. I have the sky, the sea, the faint green streak of Canadian forest on the far shore. A poem by Jim Harrison, Bridge, from Dead Man's Float, published by Copper Canyon Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. And by Lumosity, brain training with over 50 challenging games, from scientists working with university researchers to push cognitive research forward. Learn more at lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's almost 14 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today's Tuesday, the 26th of July. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. And Catherine Heumann is here to talk with us about a really exciting project, one of which I've been aware somewhat peripherally, sometimes centrally, for several years, but it's the plans to build a new arts complex right across the street from the radio and television station here. So, Catherine, welcome to a Juno Afternoon.
Thanks, Ben. It's great to see you and be here.
Yes, indeed. And so, boy, I don't even know where to begin. This concept has been around for a very long time. I was appointed by Bruce Patello when he was mayor to be on the Performing Arts Center Commission. I don't know, it was like 2003, 2004, and we did that for 3 or 4 years, and we produced a lovely report mm-hmm. that recommended And this was back when the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council was still in that little basement office in Franklin Street.
Right.
Before JAHC took over the old armory and made it into the Jack.
Right.
And so a long time ago. But that report was definitely part of the continuum of the thinking about this, the planning for this. So that's not really the vision that has emerged. So why don't I just turn it over to you and just jump into it and let us know where this project is, because things are happening, if I'm not mistaken.
Things are happening. I just left a meeting with the architects. I'll go back to it when I'm finished here. But I want to make sure that everybody out there knows that you're invited tonight at 5 o'clock to the Valley Library to hear the architects and see some of their visuals and the options that they've been sort of conceptually and schematically putting together. But since Ben brought up history, I'm going to tell you that I did a little timeline and at Nancy DeCherney's suggestion went back prior to 1960 to look at how long really Junoites had been thinking about needing such a center, whether it's performing arts or an art center or community center, which the Jack has turned into.
So well, in 1960, there wasn't a Centennial Hall.
Correct.
Was the Armory even there?
I think the Armory was there, but what wasn't there was the high school auditorium. There was a Baptist church over there, apparently.
Okay.
And this is something I just learned. I didn't know this. So the Baptist church was where now the auditorium is, more or less, of the high school. And
can I get an amen?
Oh, what? Yeah,
an amen.
Amen. Yes. and apparently, it the city. I guess I saw the word condemned it. They condemned it, and so it wasn't being used as a church. And so the Juno Douglas Little Theater went in and took it over and put $100,000 into it and made it into their first theater.
Wow. And, of course, this is before Molly Smith had created Perseverance. So this
Correct.
Is back when JDLT was the only game in town.
JDLT was the only game in town. And they operated – I wish I brought the timeline with me. They operated out of that space until the high school auditorium was built, which I think was 80 or 82. Something early 80s. So that was, and then we had the high school auditorium, and in the meantime, Perseverance Theater, and so other things happened. But so now what we're at 2016, so that's what 40, 56 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and people have been, have known that performance and art in Juneau is super, super critical to who we are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we are living in this amazing place, inspired by nature and driven to create. There's so many creative people here. So this effort that we're now in a schematic design phase, which just amazes me. And I'm holding up so that Ben can see, and you can come and see it tonight. But that we actually have sketches. We actually have color sketches with a few options that the architects have put together based on the input from the community. So they were here in June, this group of architects. Well, some of them are Northwind, and they live here. And so these conversations have been going on with this group since they were chosen. But really in the last, I'll just say 10 years, there have been many conversations with the public asking people, well, what do you think it should be like? What do you want it to be? What, you know, and the Jack is such a sort of community place for the heart of our community. There's so many things that happen at the Jack, you know, from roller derby girls to weddings to music to dance, you know, you name it. And that has become such a special thing for Juneau. We're not going to lose that. We want to actually improve that and then add a performance space.
Well, having performed in Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike at the Jack 2 summers ago, it was not an easy place to be a performer. There are no lavatories backstage,
mm-hmm.
so you have to go and see the audience at the interval or run across the street to Centennial Hall. That's not really convenient. The climatic control isn't that great. My big peeve in that play was I started the show out in a nightgown as Vanya, and I had this really cool diaphanous cotton one, but it was a little too revealing. It was a little too high up on my thighs. So they put me in this ridiculous flannel thing, and it was really hot in there 2 summers ago.
Yeah.
And I'm sure anyone who has performed at the Jack, beloved as a community institution, though we all must concede it is, it's not ideal. But we've made it work, and I think right. that's one thing I can certainly point to is the level of demand for that facility is tremendous, and it clearly indicates that there is demand for a more modern, more complete, more comprehensive performing arts facility.
Right. And one of the points that was brought up by people last month is the question, is this a community art center with a theater, or is this a theater with a community art center? And our design committee, which has now been formalized, so a design committee is a group of citizens who interface with the architects so that the architects bounce ideas off. The design committee is very clear. This is a community art center with a theater. So first, it's a community art center. We heard that loud and clear from people, and it's used that way. But we're going to have an amazing theater and an amazing community art center.
And now is maybe a good time just to broach this topic. Perseverance Theater had been a partner
Correct.
And decided it wasn't the right time for the theater to because it's not really possible to maintain the existing main stage in Juneau and completely commit to building a new theater downtown.
Right.
And so I'm just an actor. You know, I'm not
right.
a board member or anything at the decision-making level at Perseverance. So I don't really know what went into that decision. I just know that the board of directors and the staff there are really committed to continuing to provide theater there and traveling around the state as it's now done. So they're not going to be part of building this new theater with a primary theater use, but that doesn't mean Perseverance and other theatrical groups wouldn't be using the facility.
Correct,
okay.
And we certainly hope that they do, and that all the theater groups in Juneau look forward to using this. And certainly, in our conversations with the architects, flexibility is huge. So there would be the theater. There will also be what in theater speak is called a black box, but we're calling it an event studio,
mm-hmm.
because black box is kind of a weird term and people don't like it.
It makes people think that a plane went down or something.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So
I mean, you know, they're not really black. They're orange, those ones. But anyhow, I digress.
Right. Well, no, you don't, because actually one of the sketches or images that we've seen for the event studio, I'll now call it, actually has beautiful windows. So it's not black at all. It's not any color. It's beautiful wood and windows with light that, of course, can be closed off. If you need to. But that studio, that space, I think, would seat 120 people. And so you'd have that, and then you'd have the theater that will seat around 300 people.
And that's twice as big as Perseverance's current audience.
Correct.
Space, just for people's reference.
Yeah.
And the high school seats 1,200, so it's huge.
Right. So groups like, say, the Symphony will continue to use the high school for their – but they will – we've been talking a lot with the Symphony, and they have some smaller venues or smaller events that would use a smaller venue, could use a smaller venue.
If it wasn't a full orchestra, if it was a chamber music recital,
correct.
For instance. Okay.
Or like the student symphony, I
mm-hmm.
guess, or
mm-hmm.
something. So we're reaching out to all of the arts organizations and all of the community in this you know, conversation that we're having with the architects.
So back to timeline. This is the second visit that the creative team, the architects and designers from outside, have come to town. And how long are they here? What are they hoping to accomplish this week?
Okay, so what they're doing here is they've taken all the information, that everything they learned from their last visit and conversations, they've compiled that, and they've generated now several options, schematic options, that they will show tonight at the Valley Library at 5 o'clock. And probably take about a half hour if you want to see the presentation. So they've taken the elements or the programmatic elements from this project. So that would include the theater, the meeting hall, some outdoor space. That's important to people, to have some kind of outdoor space. This event studio, a scene shop, cafe, the lobby, a gallery, and then all of the like the green room and the dressing rooms and the, you know, the supporting rooms, offices for the staff. And they've taken all that and they've generated a few options for us to look at based on what they've learned from the community and from the arts organizations. So tonight, the community is invited to the Valley Library to see that presentation. And then tomorrow, the architects will be meeting with some user groups and technical people, people who have worked technically on sound or lighting or whatever with the various venues in town, to get their input, which is a little bit different than the general community would give them. They're meeting right this minute with the design committee right next door at the beautiful new museum, and showing everybody the work that they've been doing.
So all right.
It's a pretty exciting time.
And then going forward, I guess, I mean, we do kind of have to talk about money. Obviously, there's not a lot of it lying around in Juneau or anywhere in the state of Alaska right now to be expended on something like this. So this is going to be a long game getting this done. This isn't going to happen next year or the year after next. But realistically speaking, and I've had many people ask me about that, I think they like the idea, but they don't think it's feasible at this point in time. How do you keep the, I mean, first of all, there obviously has to be some money that's going towards this planning process. And so that's been taken care of, and I'm not certain where those resources have come from. But how is the overall realistic paying for it coming together?
Mm-hmm. So the budget for the project was set at $18.8 million, and our planning money has come from a couple places. A few years ago, and I don't remember which year, the city voted to set aside some sales tax money towards this effort. Bill Corbis put some money into Juneau Community Foundation towards this effort. There's another Juneau Community Foundation account that people have been depositing into.
And that's the actual construction money in that account?
Yeah, that's not being used for planning.
Okay.
Right. So right now we're rolling along with those funds, but like you said, Ben, we really need to amp that up. So we have this very strong, I think, capital campaign committee who has really gotten organized and really moving forward with their effort towards being ready to go out and make the ask of big donors, looking at grants, we have somebody doing research on prospect donors. We have somebody working on the branding for this, a professional brander working on that for this project. So that committee is going full tilt. And I think, and they've in the process of hiring a fundraising manager as well. So things are really moving forward, and it won't be at the speed of light, like you said, and we won't be relying on government. Of course, we can't in this scenario right now, but there's a lot of confidence right now that this is going to keep moving forward.
Well, I mean, obviously it won't if people don't believe in it and if people aren't doing the sorts of things that they are doing today. So that's the kind of the difficult balancing act, you know, being committed to it, being passionate about it, but knowing that it's going to take a long time. But it sounds like you've got the right mindset for that, as do many of your colleagues working on it.
Yeah, the colleagues working on it are really an incredible cross-section of our neighbors. You'll recognize almost all of the names when you hear them or see them. But we have a really strong design committee and a really strong capital campaign committee, and really great group of architects.
So one of the issues that had come up back when I was on the Performing Arts Center Commission was whose building would it be and who would run the building? And so what's the ownership and management vision at this point?
Okay, yeah, good question. So the center is envisioned as a public/private endeavor designed to make the most of our current assets. So we have assets in this town that we're not trying to build over anything that we already have or put anybody under or anything. But it will be privately built by the nonprofit and operated on land leased from the CBJ. And that, I'm just going to use this loosely, but it's a similar arrangement to what happened with the Diamond Fieldhouse. And so the private ownership will also help secure investment from private funding sources. So that's the scenario that we're working towards, working with the city and working with private donors.
And then JAHC would have a contract to manage the facility?
No, they would be
a tenant.
No, they would be running it.
Okay, so they would be the designated operator, kind of like the Alaska Center for the Performing Arts is a nonprofit in Anchorage that runs that municipal facility.
Yeah, okay. I think that's a good analogy.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, so those are some of the technical things that obviously mm-hmm. have to be thought out and planned out before you can get to this stage about what's going to go on tonight, which is kind of the more exciting part, which is what's
yeah.
it going to look like? What does
yeah.
thematics look like? So from 5 to 7 tonight out
right.
at the Valley Library.
Yes.
And and you said that there's going to be a general presentation and then a big opportunity for feedback and dialogue?
Exactly. So what they're going to do at 5:15, they will do their presentation. I'm guessing their presentation will take about a half hour. They have some, storyboards or poster boards of some of their options, and then the people that are attending will be invited to make comments on each of their options, similar to the way that they worked last time they were here, which they had little stickies. I wasn't here. I was out of town, but I think they had little stickies and people could comment on each of their storyboards. So there'll be both a presentation and then, of course, people can ask questions of the architects or of the JAC board members who are there or the partnership board members who may be there as well.
So that's coming right up, and in about an hour and a half, that'll be out at the Valley Library. So the good thing is, of course, there's not lovely weather to compete with the meeting tonight.
Right.
No reason to be wanting to go for a hike after work today, necessarily.
No.
Save that for Saturday and Sunday when it's supposed to be partly sunny.
That's right.
Any other exciting features about this? If people want to get involved, I mean, obviously, if people want to donate mm-hmm. money, there's an account, as you said, a designated mm-hmm. account at the Juneau Community Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Grateful, all donations gratefully accepted.
Mm-hmm.
And but if people, I mean, are the Capital Campaign Committee members planning any sort of events for this, or is it a little too early for that?
It's a little too early for that, but they're working towards that for sure. And there's a web page on the JAC, JAHC.org, and you go to community, and under the community link, it's called Arts Complex. And so we have a page there. You can send me an email I will add you to my update list so that you'll get an email when there are reportable advances or meetings or things that people might be interested in. So I've compiled quite a list of folks that I send updates to at this point. Please let me know and I'll add you to that list.
Okay, very good. Well, it's again, it's a journey of 1,000 steps, and we're definitely past the first one, but I don't know where we are in the spectrum, but you're going to be stepping out to the library in the Valley pretty soon here to get ready for the meeting.
That's
this
right. Yeah, we're looking forward to seeing lots of folks.
Okay, very good. Well, Catherine Heumann, thank you so much for being here on behalf of the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council and the Arts Complex. And again, the meeting's tonight at 5 p.m. at the Valley Library. If people are interested, can they call you at 586-ARTS?
They can call that number and someone, you know, that I won't be over there.
Right.
What's
the best way to get in touch with you people?
You can,
one way more, one-to-one.
Yeah, you can call. I'll give you my cell phone number. That's
okay.
What I've been doing. So my cell phone number is 541-231-9818. And feel free to give me a call or send me a text. And if you come tonight, try and be there by 5:15 so you don't miss the start of the presentation.
Or as we say in the theater, steal focus from the performers.
That's right.
Okay,
thank
you very much,
Ben.
Catherine. Have a
Thanks.
Good afternoon.
You too.
Thank you.
It's about 38 minutes after the hour, this Tuesday, the 26th of July. That was Jeffrey Seaman playing 5 Days Old from his album Everything in Between. And now on the phone we have Jill Wolfenstein to talk with us about Porkfest. Jill, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm very well, and I'm excited to hear about Porkfest. I know nothing about it, so fill me in.
Well, several years ago we had this great band called the Bad Tenants come up from Seattle and put on a concert for us to benefit our pig farm in Uganda. And so they've come back this year to grace us with their presence and give us another show. So we're calling it Porkfest Return. The first event several years ago was called Porkfest, and we had a great time. So it's Thursday night, July 28th at 9 p.m. at the Rendezvous, and they're going to give us a great show. I'm really excited about it.
And where are the band from?
The band is from Seattle, Washington. So okay. They're a Pacific Northwest band, and they describe their music as a mixture of hip-hop and blues. So they're actually really good and really unique.
If people want to get tickets, well, first of all, before we talk about getting tickets, this benefits a farm that provides, I'm going to guess, pigs for people's sustenance in Uganda?
So what we do is we train farmers how to farm sustainably, and once they've completed our training program, we give them the resources, so in this case, pigs, to go start their own businesses. And they form co-ops, so they breed these pigs and raise them and sell them. The supply of pork is about 3% of the demand in Uganda, so it's a phenomenal business to get into, and it's really helped a lot of people. So far, we put about 11,000 people into the middle class. So it's a really great cause. It's only $10 to get in. You get a free beer if you buy the ticket in advance, which you can do by contacting me at 907-612-1551. And we're going to have lots of prizes. We're raffling off an airboat ride and a heli drop. We've got pizza, like gift certificates that we're giving away. There's going to be pulled pork sandwiches, and we're going to play musical chairs. There's a live pig there that we're going to guess the weight of. So it's just going to be a really fun time.
Excellent. So this is Porkfest Returns, and that's this Thursday, the 28th of July, starting at 9 o'clock at the Rendezvous. And Jill, give folks your number again one more time if they want to get tickets in advance.
Yeah, it's 907-612-1551. And I should clarify that free beer they're getting is the beer of their choice. It's not even a specified type of beer. So you can come have whatever beer's on draft for free if you buy those tickets in advance from me.
But you have to call, someone has to call you and do it in advance. If they show up at the door, there will be no free beer. They'll be paying for that first beer.
No free beer, that is correct. And entry is still $10 at the door. It's a great cause. We're going to have a great time. Hopefully we see a lot of Juno out there.
Okay, well, thank you so much for calling in and sharing that information with us. It's Porkfest Returns this Thursday night. Jill Wolfenstein, I hope you have a great turnout, and bless all those folks in Uganda whom you're helping out.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye now.
Bye.
This is Bird Note. Birds are loud. Sometimes it seems that the smaller the bird, the bigger the voice. Some of the noisiest species in the Americas are the wrens, their loud chants and trills all out of proportion to the slightness of those slender bodies. The ruby-crowned kinglet, too, that bright-headed sprite of the treetops, would be downright deafening if it were just a little bigger. Hummingbirds, of course, were originally named for the mechanical buzzing produced by their inconceivably fast wing beats. But some males, such as the Costa's hummingbird of the Southwest, are equally notable for their vocal attainments. Late in the desert winter, these tiny gems take conspicuous perches on ocotillos and mesquites, where they flash their purple throats and utter a song described by 19th century naturalists as like the sharpest note on a violin. A male Costa's hummingbird weighs 3.6 grams, which, given its voice, is maybe just as well. Bird Notes taking a cruise up the Amazon River in January 2017. Care to join us? Learn more at birdnote.org.
It's 43 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today is Tuesday, the 26th of July. This is a Juneau afternoon, and I want to welcome Abby Lowell here to the show.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks for having me.
And we're going to talk now about tying flies.
We are, and a host of other things as well.
And a host of other outdoorsy fun things. So here's a fly tying class for women that's coming up, first and foremost.
That's exactly right. So tomorrow evening, it's right around the corner, and ladies, we still have room in this wonderful class, is the first of our Beyond Bow series. And for those who don't know, BOW stands for Becoming an Outdoor Woman, and these classes are they're an offshoot of our Becoming an Outdoor Woman workshop that happens every spring out at Echo Ranch. And the idea behind these classes is to either build upon skills that women learn at the workshop or simply to offer courses that we can't logistically offer at the workshop itself. And so the first in a series of three is coming up tomorrow evening, and that will be at the Douglas Island State Office Building, and we will be tying flies that will be wonderful for fishing for salmon. So, big, colorful, fun patterns, and we hope we already have, a handful of women signed up, and we still have some slots available. And so that is happening from 5 to 8 p.m. tomorrow night.
And if someone wants to sign up for that, how does she go about doing so?
Well, they can go about doing that by going to bow.adfng.alaska.gov, or they can simply call me or email me. And the cost for that class is $25. So it's really a reasonable price, and it includes, we'll give you all the materials you need, we'll give you all the equipment you might need, as well as the instruction. And it's going to be Kayla Royce and I teaching it, and we're both really happy to share what we know. So that's coming up tomorrow night, but that's just the first, as I mentioned. We also have Upland Bird Hunting happening on August 6th, and that is going to basically be a hunt simulation on everything you might need to know to hunt for a grouse and ptarmigan up in the Alpine. And on August 1, the season opens for small game in Southeast Alaska.
A hunting we will go, a hunting we will go. Sorry, I had to.
Go for it. It's great. No, it's exactly right. And our own area biologist, Stephanie Sell, will be teaching that class. And we're going to set women off on the right path toward knowing what gear to bring, what type of ammo to use, what type of guns they might have available to them, how to identify the different species, what kind of habitat to look for. It's really going to be an all-day adventure, and that's going to have a catered lunch. And that one is, like I said, on Saturday, August 6th. The cost for that is $35. And again, folks can go to bow.adfng.alaska.gov to locate the registration forms. The only thing that's changed about this class is that we were going to have it up in the Mount Roberts Alpine. It's also great habitat for birds. But instead, we decided to switch it to Eagle Crest. And the reason is because while you can't actually shoot a firearm on Eagle Crest property, that area gives us great access to places where you can. And since the season is going to be open, should women see anything, our instructor might have a chance to harvest a bird and actually show them how to dress it, which would be really fantastic. So that's going to be Saturday, August 6th, up at Eagle Crest. And then the last class that I'm very psyched about, pun intended, is called Psyched About Silvers. And this is going to be an all-day fly fishing adventure on a local stream. And we're going to basically teach people how to fly fish for coho, which are arguably one of the funnest species of fish to catch on a fly rod. They're very sporty, very acrobatic, and women are guaranteed to have a good time at this class. Now, that one is on Saturday, August 27th, and the cost for that is $55. And again, we'll give you everything you need, boots, waders, rods, flies, the whole bit. You just have to show up.
Okay, but pre-registration for all those is a good idea.
Yes, very much so. We do need to get everybody to register ahead of time. And again, should I say the URL one more time?
Absolutely.
I can't say it too many times, I know. bow.adfng.alaska.gov. And they click the registration tab, click the schedules tab, and you'll see all the listings for all the BOW events all over the state. Just look for Juneau.
Very good.
Yeah.
So, Abby, that's a lot of programming, and between now and Labor Day, a lot of skills that a person could acquire.
Indeed, it is. And, really, our goal at Fish and Game, all the employees there, just really want to do an amazing job at managing all of our resources here in Alaska. And you know, we just want to also try to get everybody involved and out enjoying them, and this is part of that. So I really encourage women to sign up. But, you know, even though the classes are geared toward women, I should also mention men can sign up too. They're absolutely welcome to. Anybody 18 and over is welcome to join. Actually, if I could mention our other programs, which are open to friends and families, those
absolutely.
Are also coming up.
Yeah,
right?
please do.
So folks might be familiar with Alaskans Afield, and we have two classes coming up. This is open to anybody, families, young, old. In fact, youngsters coming with a paying adult attend free. So that's really great, I think, because I have young ones, and that's always handy. Our first class is Saturday, August 20th, and it's called Step into Shotgun. And so basically, we're just going to have the participants come out. We're going to give them some hunter safety, hunter education. And by the end of the class, we hope to have them blasting clays out of the sky. And then that cost is $45, and that's pretty much just to cover the cost of ammunition and the clays. And there is a minimum age for that class. It's 10 years old. But again, if they're coming with a paying adult, they come free. Waterfowl hunting is the one that's coming up after that, and that's on Saturday, September 10th. And I know that's the same weekend as the Klondike, but for anybody who doesn't already have something going on, they should really think about taking this. Basically, this is going to happen out on the Mendenhall wetlands. And folks are going to learn how to successfully waterfowl hunt locally here. And there's a lot of opportunity, a lot of good information to be shared in those classes as well. That class cost is $20. And both of those are from 10 to 1 on those days. So it's not going to eat up your whole Saturday. It's just going to give you some pretty great info.
And that's got to be a different URL at the DFG website, right? Because it's not part of BOW.
You're exactly right.
All right.
Pretty close, but not quite the same. It's alaskansafield.adfg.alaska.gov. I'll say it one more time, alaskansafield.adfg.alaska.gov. And they just click on the Juno tab, and they can register right there. It's a fillable form online.
And if people did want to call and talk with you, get more information about this, in addition to going online, how can they get in touch with you at Fish and Game?
Oh, yeah, sure. Just call me at 465-4292, or you can email me, and that's pretty easy, abby.lowell@alaska.gov. That's abby.lowell@alaska.gov.
So a lot of great opportunities for learning more about how to enjoy the fish and game resources that are part of our life here in Alaska. Thanks so much for coming on our Juno Afternoon, Abby, and sharing that with our listeners. Anything else you'd like to mention?
I think that's about it. Like I said, it's just such a great series of classes. I'm just excited to offer them. And I should mention that these classes wouldn't be possible without our partner organization, which is the Outdoor Heritage Foundation of Alaska. It's because of those folks that these classes are not only possible, like I mentioned, but also really affordable.
Excellent. And of course, in these times of straitened circumstances, organizations partnering with the state are crucial to making good things happen like this. So,
indeed.
So you're very good to have mentioned them. Well, Abby Lowell, thank you so very much. I hope you get a few more people to sign up for the women, but not just for women fly tying class tomorrow night, and for the other great programs that you mentioned. So if you're listening and those things interest you, give Abby a call or go to the Fish and Game website and make it happen.
Thanks a lot, Ben.
Thank you. And that was Ed Gerhard, Counting the Ways is the name of his album, Love Songs. That track was Willie O. Winsbury.
Support comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, featuring the new flagship cafe and bakery located at 130 Front Street in downtown Juneau. More information at heritagecoffee.com.
And it's about 57 minutes after the hour here on a Juneau afternoon. Today is Tuesday, the 26th of July. Thank you so much for listening. Applications are now being accepted for artists to show at the Alaska State Museum, the Father Andrew Keshevarov State Library Archive and Museum. These are solo exhibition applications by individual Alaskan artists. It's open to all resident visual artists who have not had a solo exhibition at the State Museum within the past 6 years. The deadline for receipt of a completed application is the 26th of August, and artists are invited to submit applications to a selection committee comprised of museum staff and art professionals and to develop new works for this opportunity. The solo art exhibitions will be scheduled starting in 2017. Interested artists can learn more at the State Museum's Artist Opportunities page at museums.alaska.gov and apply at callforentry.org. If you have questions, you can contact Jackie Manning, the curator of exhibitions, jackie.manning@alaska.gov. And I previously mentioned the First Folio. That is being sponsored by the Father Keshevarov State Library Archives and Museum. And if you're interested in more information about that, you can go to lam.alaska.gov/First Folio Alaska for the full events calendar. And that might be a good thing to do if you are interested in some of those readings. And they're continuing tonight, as I said at the beginning of the show. The weather forecast from our friends at the National Weather Service is for rain, a high around 60 today. A little cooler out in the valley. Tonight, the rain will continue. Tomorrow, rain heavy at times, a high around 60, southeast winds to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, more rain, also heavy at times, a low in the mid-50s. Thursday, the persistent rain is going to transmogrify into some simple showers. And the extended forecast, at this point at least, is for it to get a little bit less rainy and be partly cloudy, partly sunny for the weekend. Very well timed that. So stay tuned, and maybe there'll be some sun opportunities this weekend out there. Tomorrow on a Juneau afternoon, Ray Vidic will be here with details about an upcoming workshop on building healthy families. And we'll continue our series on summer fun activities with John Neary, the director of the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. Thanks for listening.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AM.